What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And joining us today is also Senior Writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing okay. Sam is here to chat with all of us about Samsung's new event. It was still an Impact event, right? It was Galaxy Impact something.
Yep.
I think the subtitle was Galaxy AI is Coming, which sounds like a threat to me. It doesn't sound like something I actually want. It sounds like Bixby. Bixby is alive. We will be chatting about Samsung's new event. And also, Sherlyn has finally had a chance to try out the Apple Vision Pro.
Hell yeah!
Along with our editor-in-chief. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. And also, there's some news around the Vision Pro. I mean, the pre-orders are going up as you guys are listening to this podcast, probably. And yeah, it's going to be in people's hands soon. So that's exciting.
What a week.
What a week.
What a week.
Jeez. No break after CES. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcast catcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. So Samsung didn't waste any time after CES, right? They were just like, okay, you guys are done, tired after hearing all these announcements. Here's more phones, everything you were expecting. What did Samsung give us at the Galaxy AI event, guys?
Let's just say Samsung didn't just not wait till after CES. Samsung didn't even wait during CES.
Yeah,
okay, Sam and I, all right, listen, if y'all saw our coverage, you saw all the things that we were doing, blah, blah, blah. And Sam and I had to, like, this was more Sam than me, really. Like, we had to take, like, a good 2 or 3 hours in the middle of, like, the first or second day of the show to go and get hands-on. And that just threw my cadence off. I'm sure, like, it added, it took precious time away from your day too, Sam. So, hey, Samsung, thanks a lot, man. Thanks. But we did see interesting things. I do have my thoughts, but I'll let Sam go because Sam spent way more time with a more interesting phone of the lot, in my opinion. Sam, go for it.
Yeah, Sam, please sing the Samsung song.
We do this every time. So, I will say that, like, this whole thirst for, like, Samsung and all the other phone companies to, like, launch earlier and earlier in the year has finally hit, like, a real issue because you either are launching during CES or you have to launch in, like, the 2 days before CES after the new year. And it's like a lot of this stuff used to happen at Mobile World Congress. That's like kind of not happening anymore. And so it's just like I don't understand it and I don't know what they're going to do anymore because basically if they want to push it earlier, they're going to launch at the end of the previous year. So whatever. Anyways, Samsung, you know, for this Unpacked, we got essentially one device or one family of devices, the new S24. You know,
which is weird.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you look at the timeline, you know, we got new Z Fold, Z Flip back in like the late summer, new Buds Tab S9 in the late summer. So you can see why they, you know, at least on the timeline wise, we didn't get a bunch of new refresh devices. It still feels a little bit weird to have a whole Galaxy Unpacked for a single device. There was one other thing, but we'll get to that in a minute. And
we will get. I will say this is kind of refreshing, guys, because every time we talk about Samsung events, it's like here's 10 devices with like vaguely different names, but they're all kind of similar, and we don't know how to differentiate them. Whereas now it's just like, hey, it's a couple of phones, and you can prepare. You can think, okay, if I'm going to upgrade my phone, I know what to look forward to this year, right?
I'm going to let you continue really quick, Sam, but I was going to say, I'm glad they didn't, like, I was like, where are the laptops? But you know what? I'm really glad because they've been so incrementally improved every year for the last few years, the laptops. I'm glad they didn't just force themselves to shit out a new series of laptops. So that's a good thing, Samsung. Good job. But go on, Sam. Sorry, we interrupted.
Right. So we have, three devices. We have the standard S24, the S24 Plus, and the S24 Ultra. Now, you know, one thing to kind of put this in a context is that this is the second year of kind of Samsung's, like, two-year product refresh cycle. So as you can kind of see just by looking at them, the designs are almost exactly the same. And these, you know, I think Sherlyn mentioned this in our hands-on, is that these are kind of the most plainest Samsung devices we've seen in a while. It's, you know, a glass sandwich and there's some cameras on the back and that's kind of it. There are basically no distinguishing features aside from on the new S24 Ultra, it has a new titanium frame. Now, once again, we saw this, you know, Apple did this last fall with the iPhone 15 Pro. And so, and now you had the natural, oh, Samsung's copying Apple again. And they kind of are.
Yeah.
Has anybody licensed CS titanium yet? For a commercial.
Yeah, device. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like Apple would do that. Come on. One thing I want to point out, by the way, guys, looking at these phones, these give me real Nokia vibes. Like Nokia.
Oh, really?
Like the Windows Phone Nokia vibes. Yes.
Probably a good thing to call out in terms of design because Nokia phones were always known for not having much of a design. They were, you know, they were largely known as bricks for about 10 years.
Well, except for the PureView. Yeah.
Dev, you're talking about the Ultra, right?
I'm talking about the, I mean, they all kind of look like this, but the Ultra too. Yeah.
My first thing was like, I looked at the, and Sam, you know, I walked in the hands-on event with you and I looked, I picked one S24 up and I was like, these are iPhones. Like, these feel exactly like iPhones.
Yeah, they had the same rounded corners, especially on the like the standard S24, S24 Plus. And they, you know, they've done a couple small tweaks, like color matching the frame of the device to the color of the glass. But hey, you know, you're not buying this phone because it looks good, is what I'm going to say. And there are special titanium colors for the S24 Ultra, but they all just look like darker, less vibrant versions of the other colors on the regular models. And it's just like,
just like the iPhone Pros.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's not like, I think they look, it sounds better in your head than it does in person, than it looks in person. So I don't know.
Yeah. So judging from our write-ups, guys, it does seem like, not surprised here, AI is kind of the forefront feature, generative AI in these phones. How is that being applied?
Basically, you're looking at what Google did for the Pixel 8. Samsung basically did their own take on that, you know, pretty much across the board for the S24 series. And I think Sherlyn and I have some different feelings about this whole big push into AI because, you know, just get it out of the way real quick. Aside from the new AI features, and obviously there's a new Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 chip that's powering all these, so you're getting better performance and better
for power Galaxy, density. For Galaxy.
For Galaxy, yeah, and all that. So, you know, that's nice. But aside from that, there's the hardware is very, very, very similar. You know, there's a slight change in the S24 Ultra's camera, the telephoto lens. It's now a 5x optical zoom instead of a 10x optical zoom. Though Samsung says you can do some pixel binning and some AI, you know, kind of enhancement. So you still get, quote unquote, 10x optical quality zoom. That kind of remains to be seen how that, you know, really fares. But yeah, it's really all about the AI. And so we're talking about, you know, a couple big main areas of AI. There's photo enhancement, which comes into play with editing, you know, doing your magic lasso around subjects, dragging and dropping them, and using AI to generate, you know, missing elements, kind of like, you know, content-aware filter on Photoshop. There's also chat assist, which includes, like, note summarization and live translation and some tone correction stuff for, like, texting and emailing. And then there's the new big new circle to search feature, which is kind of a joint thing between Samsung and Google, which
that's
allows...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. This is, you know, it's nice, and it allows you to basically just search or highlight pretty much anything on the screen and then have Google do a lookup. You can, you know, search images as well. So it's kind of like a combination between your traditional Google search and Google Lens and kind of putting, making it easier to use and very, very simple to use without needing to know how to do special queries or visual lookups and stuff like that.
It's also like integrated within the experience, which I like, because if you want to do Lens or if you want to do like a Google image search, which you can do, you have to take a photo of something, then you have to go to the app or Google or whatever and then upload the image and then it like figures it out. Whereas if I'm just browsing around, I'm like, hey, what is this? What is this thing in this ad? Can I get more info on this? And just tap it and circle it. That's pretty cool. I could actually see Apple stealing this feature at some point. It's genuinely useful. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's a nice way to, like you said, make it easier to access, you know, the power of their internet. But I don't think it fundamentally changes, you know, the way you use your phone. It's a very nice quality of life feature is the way I look at it, especially in terms of circle to search.
Gotcha. So this is like a half step year upgrade for Samsung, basically. Are any of these AI features going to be like going to the older phones?
Yes. We actually just got confirmation yesterday that the AI features, they haven't told us exactly if it's all of the features or some of them, depending on like the capabilities of the device, will get ported to all the 2023 flagships. So your S23, your Tab S9, and that includes the Z Flip 5 and the Z Fold 5 and the S23 FE. So basically, if you bought one of Samsung's phones from last year, you should get at least some of these AI features before the first half of this year. I just think that's nice because, hey, anyone who has like a year old phone or less doesn't want to be pressured into being like, oh, now I have FOMO and I got to upgrade. Like, okay, that's cool.
I have some fairly like long-winded thoughts about this. I kind of quickly want to
I think we have slightly different takes on this whole push into AI, and you got kind of spicy about it in your hands-on.
I mean, don't we love a little spicy, Sherlyn?
We got to be spicy, yeah.
Okay, so I will say, Sam, you said like these are like things that Google has been doing since the Pixel 8, and I would like to like remind you both and our audience, I think Google's been doing this since it introduced Tensor, some of these features especially. So that's like 2016.
And then way before that, if you talk about the assistant
absolutely.
In general.
Exactly. I mean, generative AI, sure, like using, you know, the system to summarize things, that sort of thing, yes, Pixel 8. But like, if you talk about the like translation within the keyboard stuff, that's all Tensor brought since 2016. Not to like be like fact-checky or whatever. It's more like Google has been doing this a while is my point.
You're right. You are correct. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you know, I wrote that from my hands-on.
And I was
like,
just for the record real quick, all of the new AI features happen on device except for
yes.
Circle to Search.
Exactly. So that's the other thing. And Sam Riley points it out. So it's not only happening on device, but it's also like Samsung's own software other than Circle to Search. Circle to Search is a Google feature that Samsung is integrated into its phones. But like everything else here is performed by Samsung's own software. Gauss is their generative AI model. G-A-U-S-S. Apparently it's pronounced Gauss. And so I just want to focus on, there's a few demos that I took at the hands-on that I thought were really interesting, especially the chat assist one. I think, Sam, you rightly pointed out to me that I needed to go and get time with this. And absolutely, you were right. The in chat assist, you have three options. You can get the AI to like translate your language, do spelling and error check, but also tone, like tone assist or something. Like basically rewrite what you've typed, right? And uh-huh. So basically Amazon Halo, except not prescriptive, just like suggestive. Huh. But for example, I typed out, and this is the example I mentioned in my hands-on. I was like, hey, where can I get some sweet, sweet barbecue? And then like during my hands-on, and I don't think this was ever in the video like that we shot, like it didn't make it into the final cut. But during my hands-on, every little thing I would say would be flagged as like inappropriate or offensive. So be like,
well, I think that's maybe saying something
correct.
About you more than something about the AI. But
well, okay. So at the start, I was typing like, "What up, mofo?" You know, and then they were like, "Not too inoffensive. Can't translate this for you. Can't do any tone assist." But then I like toned it down and I was like, "Hey there, where can I get some sweet sweet barbecue?" And even like sweet sweet barbecue was like too
suggestive.
Offensive. Apparently, I'm too sexy for a Samsung.
I was
going to
say, I think the AI might know you very well.
Yeah, it's actually trained on every Samsung phone you've already previewed. It's like, oh, I know her. This girl's in front of me now.
They felt
yeah.
me walking
she,
up.
She was not actually talking about barbecue.
mm-hmm. No. So I want to like quickly blaze through the rest of this particular one because I want to actually talk about something else. So Chat Assist like then, you know, took that and was like, in the formal version or in the professional version, it translated it. So like it suggested, hello, I would like to inquire about the whereabouts of delectable barbecue options in the vicinity. Additionally, I would like, it just was quite funny. Please go read the hands-on for the like full transcript of like a few of these other options, like casual, emojify, and social, which was like painful, but they inserted the hashtags BBQ lover and hashtag foodie. And I was like,
wow,
this sucks, but damn, you're correct though, right? So anyway, that's Chat Assist. The experience I want to bring up, and I kind of want to like play out for you guys and for our audience, is translation, the live translate tool that I know, Sam, you also took a demo of and you got that on video for us. So basically, this is a feature where if you call someone in a different country, say your Uber pickup person or your a foreign like language restaurant, you can hit the live translate option and like this computerized voice, similar to Google's Duplex, will translate what you're saying and you select the language or have auto detect or something. And so I did this and basically if it works, it's supposed to go Sherlyn, you know, calling restaurant, right? But when the phone connects, when the call clicks, it will be like, speaking in the other person's language, hola, explanation in Spanish about how this is a computer doing translations, right? Okay, cool. So very similar to Duplex, which is like, you know, hey, someone's using a robot assistant to talk to you. Okay, cool. So then I go, hi. And then supposedly it should work. Me saying hi, phone, Samsung phone says hola. Other person says hola back and Samsung phone tells me hello, right? That's how it should go. My experience went, hi. Other person goes, hola, computer goes, hola, and computer goes, hi. So it was like very much like the delay was really bad. And the other person clearly understood me to the point where they were already answering to me. So it was like, it was just this weird confusion situation. And I walked out and talked to so many Samsung people about it. I was like, first, you got to get your actors on the right script. Like, wait for the machine to talk before answering. That too. But then I was like, in the real world, no restaurant maitre d' or manager is going to have the time to wait a lag, like 2-3 seconds for that translation to happen. They'd be like I'm done. Bye. You know?
I wonder if you would do longer phrases, because I feel like anywhere you say hi. Or,
I did.
You know. Like, yeah. So what did longer things sound like?
So longer was also the same. Where I was like, "Hello, can I make a reservation for tonight?" Pause. The other person goes, "Sí, ¿y cuánto a qué hora?" And I was like, I didn't understand any of that. And then I had to hear my translated words go through, and then I could hear their translated words come back to me. And it was a lot of waiting around. The like rhythm is very like, you have to be so precise and careful about the cadence. During our demo, I don't think it's the best like real world testing. Obviously, Sam and I are going to try this out when we get the S24s in and see if it works. And Sam, do you remember where they said it would work? Like, was it in the US only, or was it like everywhere?
I don't remember. They said it's like, you know, between 11 or 17 different languages. A lot of the messaging for like these events is like, they'll tell us how it pertains to the US, but not how it pertains to the like globally. So we just don't have all of that info just yet, but yeah.
So anyway, point being, the translation seemed accurate. I mean, like, I couldn't like see any Mandarin translation happening, so I couldn't like gauge how effective or accurate the translations were. But like, to point out, this is Samsung's translation engine, not a Google Translate, which we're all so used to, or even Microsoft, which has been doing Translate for a while. Yes. This is Samsung
had to build its own thing. I hate this. Like, I hate like when Samsung does this stuff, because they're like, okay, we can't use Google's thing. We have to do our own thing. And this is the breakdown of Android, right? Like, if Google could get everybody on the same page to do like a thing together, it could be a nice cohesive experience. But Samsung gonna Samsung.
Yeah.
Like,
so,
you can't stop it.
And I want to say, I think that was kind of your issue a little bit, Sherlyn, is that like, you felt Samsung is doing a lot of just like copying of what Google has already done. And you were like kind of fed up with it a little bit, right?
So Sam like is bringing up this point that I was talking to him about yesterday, where I felt maybe I was a little too harsh on my hands-on. Where like,
no,
maybe,
I think that's totally, you know, fair, actually, yeah.
Well, near the end, I was like, look, I'm so sick of Samsung just jumping on trends. But Sam had a very good point of like, maybe they'll get left behind if they don't try their own thing. I mean, Sam, I'll leave you to expand on your point yourself. But for me, I'm just like, this is a company that was like, squad, awesome fam, iconic, like, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and was like, yeah, Bixby, listen, assistance, and then like, yeah, we can do scene optimizer and telephoto, and just keeps copying.
Every
trend.
I mean,
right?
Didn't they have streamers? Wasn't Mr. Beast?
Oh my god, Pokemon.
Pokemon. Pokemon. Yeah.
I know it's Pokemon. I'm making fun of the guy who said,
oh, he
Pokemon.
Said Pokemon.
On yes, the keynote.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't watch the whole keynote because...
Good
no,
for you. I'm proud of you. Shouldn't have. Read my live vlog, because I actually do make fun of the guy pronouncing it wrong too. But anyway.
Poor guy.
It feels a little bit like trend hopping, but maybe I'm too critical of this. There might be a more reasonable explanation. Yeah. That
I mean, they're
Sam
desperate. They're desperate. But Sam, I do want to know what you think about Samsung basically rehashing a lot of this stuff from Google and others.
Yeah. So I think... I'm not as annoyed by the approach as Sherlyn, and I kind of see this as a perspective of Samsung was kind of forced into doing this because of what we've seen from Google, and they can't afford to like kind of completely miss out. So they're at a point where they have to invest some time into their own AI capabilities, and we're kind of seeing that. And this kind of also goes to show, like, you know, Sherlyn was mentioning, you know, Samsung's speech, the AI speech felt a little stilted. And this is kind of one of those things where Google has been beating the drum about natural language recognition, natural language speech from devices. And I think that's one of those things that it's hard to quantify, but when you hear it, you immediately know there's a big difference in language capabilities. And then second of all, I really think that in terms of, you know, Samsung had to do this, and I think it's not necessarily a mistake to try to develop their own models, because I think they are going to need them at some point down the line. But if you look back to, like, you know, earlier this or last year, we were talking about, you know, Microsoft's talking about ChatGPT, and then Bard just suddenly showed up. And I think this is sort of like Samsung's response to feeling the pressure of everybody talking about AI and how we're entering the AI era. And so they felt like a need to respond in order to like lay some of the groundwork for that thing. It's just a little disappointing to see that they didn't get as much done on the hardware front. I think it's a good first effort from Samsung, but like, it's... Unless you're really into AI, it's going to be a hard sell for people looking for a new phone.
I think my question is like, why? Sure, Samsung had to do something, but why do they have to do their own thing, right? Because I've been covering these devices since they launched the Galaxy phones, right? And it's always been about Samsung never quite following like what Google is doing exactly and trying to do their own thing. And it's like, guys, you were the premier Android phone maker. Just focus on that. Like, be a partner to Google and like right, work exactly. with them. You know,
so
to
me, that so would work. So that. That's so like basically the point that I was thinking since like Sam started talking was just like it's in such an awkward position, right? Samsung and Google, they're both in weird positions where they're both partners and in competition. And so like you have Samsung here, we have our own language model, but yeah, Hiroshi, come on stage, talk with us about Circle uh-huh. to Search. Meanwhile, no, screw you. We're not going to use your language models for Transit. We're going to use our Gauss because we Korean, you know, we know Korean. And like just, I mean, they didn't say that. Clearly, that's not the reason.
I think that's part, is Samsung is like a major national like star for Korea, for South Korea too, right? And they want to do things themselves when they can.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like a tiny bit of like the pride element. Like we don't, we think we can do it. We don't need to rely on outside sources for all of our software. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just weird that Samsung and Google are like this because we see what great things they can do when they do collaborate. Sure. We see that when Google and Samsung had to team up on Wear OS 4 or 4.5, right? They like had to. They eventually do seem to come to terms with the fact that one of them is really good at hardware and some of the software, and one of them is just only good at the software, and uh-huh. they can collaborate. And it can bear fruition. It just is. It takes them some time to figure out what that partnership looks like because they're both having
so annoying.
Their own interests.
I feel like this is like another side of the innovator's dilemma thing. It's more like the what do you call it, the leader's stubbornness or something. Like you're being stubborn like a mule because you refuse to do this thing which could make you both better because you think you could do it on your own. And meanwhile, Apple's out here with their fully integrated platform where they control, you know, top to bottom everything,
which is good and bad, right?
Good and
let's
bad.
Not, let's be real here. Yeah,
I don't like looking at something like the Vision Pro, and when we start talking about that, I do feel like a product like that is possible because it is such a full combination of everything Apple is doing. Like I don't think any other company could do something like that. That's as well integrated. Meanwhile, you're never going to make your own phone platform, Samsung. You're not going to, I don't think Samsung's going to do anything separately with these natural language models. Are you going to put in their TVs or their laptops? Meanwhile, they're going to be using Windows. They're going to be using other platforms, you know, for even their TVs. I feel like Google is the natural partner there, and they're just kind of holding each other apart. But go ahead, Sam.
Speaking about Samsung's other devices, there was one more thing at the event. But before we jump to that, I want to see if Sam had any like wrap-up thoughts about
the
phones.
Yeah, I will just say that like aside from the language stuff, I was actually kind of like mildly impressed by the photo editing features. There's a lot of, you know, very simple like circle to highlight, move subjects around, and some of the edit suggestion features I thought were actually pretty slick, because all you have to do is you go on, you know, you go on the gallery app, click on a picture, and the phone will automatically look for, hey, do we see shadows, do we see reflections, is it a portrait? And if you do with it, you press the info button and you say remove shadows, remove reflections, and that was actually really, really seamless. And that's the kind of stuff that I like, because it's taking something that would take a lot more time to do if you were manually editing it and kind of streamlining it. And it was relatively effective. There was one part where like I was moving like a skateboarder around and like his foot kind of looked a little weird and like it missed part of his ankle. But, you know, it's AI, that's kind of expect. And it was actually, some of the generative stuff actually felt a little bit more performant on the S24 than say the Pixel 8. So we'll see, you know. Qualcomm was talking a big game about the NPUs on the Snapdragon 8 Gen 3. Maybe that was like, you know, one example of it. So we'll kind of see how it is. It's, you know, but in terms of hardware, not a ton has changed. Slightly bigger batteries on the S24 and S24 Plus. Slightly newer camera, you know, on the S24 Ultra plus that titanium frame. But it's really all about the AI.
Mm-hmm. Samsung
slightly
is pledging
brighter screens, right? 2600 nits.
Right, slightly better screens, and then we did see a quick clip of the Vision Booster, which adds another 300 perceived nits of brightness. Not actual, like, full nits, but perceived.
Just if you want to stare at the sun in your hand, you can just look at that. I want to point out, Samsung said that they are pledging 7 years of support for these phones, just like the new Pixel, so
love,
that is
love
a
to
nice
see it.
Trend.
Yep.
Love to see it, yeah.
This is the kind of trend that I think anyone can be like, yes, more people should copy this. No one's ever going to make fun of you for copying Google for doing 7 years back last fall.
Well, it's also because of California law, too. Like, I think that is a thing.
Absolutely.
California is pushing companies to do that as well.
Good job, regulators.
Good job.
I want to really quickly just highlight the fact that, like, as we're talking about Google, copying Google, whatever. Sam, when I walked into the hands-on space with you, I must admit that I showed up to the hands-on a little lost as to what to expect, because the briefing was a week ago. I had flown two different planes or whatever. And it was like called Magic Editor in the corner. Is that really the feature name? Because that is exactly what Google names it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't.
Okay, so.
You know what? I'm actually okay if they want to both call it Magic Editor, because it's one less thing for me to remember, and they do the same thing, so fine. It's like, it's basically the same feature. Might as well have the same
name. But that was confusing for me, because I walked in, I was like, oh, all right, why is Samsung showing off a Google feature in like a dedicated corner of the room? Like, it was a big deal. And I was like, okay, did I miss something? I was like, all right. And it turns out it's Samsung's own take. So I was just like confused. But okay, Samsung had one more device. And I will say, you mentioned that, Devinder, you weren't sure if like Samsung was going to rely on its own language models for its other devices. Is it bringing it to its TVs? And I believe at CES, Samsung did mention Galaxy AI was coming to some of its other devices
as well. I assume, yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Yes, they did, after like a lot of teasing about like Samsung Health, make small changes every day. Samsung Health's got great Galaxy AI integrations coming soon. It just was like, by the way, new form factor, and then shows us like a render of a ring. I believe some people at the San Jose event got to see this ring. We opted not to go because we got the sense that, a spidey sense, if you will, that we would not be able to touch it for ourselves.
No one got to actually use the ring at the event.
No one actually got any good time or actual, yeah. Anyway,
so what is it supposed to be? What is the ring supposed to be? And what did we see yesterday? Because it was kind of hilarious, yes, to be honest.
So Samsung teased up the Galaxy Ring. It is a wearable. You wear it on your finger. It can, I mean, presumably, because Samsung said nothing, it can presumably work with Samsung Health, right? To do sleep tracking, because sleep was a big thing that Samsung kept talking about. It can presumably do heart rate tracking, because that will tie into the sleep and sleep apnea thing. And like, that's it. Cool. It's basically the Aura ring, but it looks a little sleeker in my opinion. Sam, did you catch anything else? Like, did I miss anything?
No, I mean, Samsung talked a lot of talk about Samsung Health and, you know, fitness tracking and, you know, being able to provide alerts. And then they kind of segued that into, hey, here's a Galaxy ring. It looks a lot like the Aura ring. Design is very, very slightly different, but a ring's a ring, okay? You're not really differentiating yourself on ring design. And then they said, hey, we'll have more to talk about later this year. And then they kind of disappeared off in the night.
A render, too. It wasn't even a device they held
up,
right?
I was making a joke in our live blog that, like, they pulled the Sailor Moon tuxedo mask meme, where he comes down, swoops his cape, makes a big to-do, and then disappears. Like, oh,
thanks, Galaxy Ring.
I'm out.
We love you, Galaxy Ring. My job here is done. Let me just point out, I'm going to put my cards on the table right here. This form factor is terrible. Do you guys wear rings regularly?
No.
I mean, aside from a wedding ring, I don't wear rings.
Even I don't like, sometimes when I go out, I wear the wedding ring, but I don't always because I don't like it. It is super uncomfortable to have something in your fingers at all times. Cher, you hate going to sleep with gadgets. Imagine the thing just like grasping around your...
That's why I've been intrigued.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, I think it differs from person to person.
You can relax a watch. Here's my thing. You can relax a watch. You can like shift it up and down. You can move it around a little. A ring is stuck and your fingers over the day sometimes swell.
I feel like this might be slightly due to you hating rings in general. You know, you said you don't wear a ring.
I mean, it's not a great form factor. Yeah.
I don't have an issue with the idea of a ring itself. I think it's actually good to like, hey, if you are not a smartwatch person, then you can wear a ring. I think that's like but like to prop it up as anything more than that, I'm not sure. I feel like that's probably getting a little bit too ahead of itself.
It also does exactly what the smartwatch does, doesn't it? Basically.
Not exactly, because the smartwatch can do a bit more, actually.
Very similar. I mean, obviously we're still missing details on what the ring exactly does, but I think the intent is to do, it should have very similar features, or, you know, kind of still waiting to see if it has any distinguishing features that, you know, a Samsung smartwatch might not. But yeah.
So look, I think that a ring to me, Devendra, when you said that, like, I hate wearing gadgets to sleep, that's why a ring stands out to me as potentially being more comfortable because it's a lot smaller. And I understand your concerns.
No, but I'm asking, have you tried wearing a ring? Like,
I have not. And I have an Aura ring that I just haven't put on because I've been like too busy with other things. Yeah. So I'm going to try that out soon.
Just try it.
But my big problem with rings is that, like, in general, when I wash my hands, I always have to take a ring off. And like, it just, that's where it becomes cumbersome for me because then I wait for my finger to dry.
You just got to get used to taking washing hands with your ring on.
Yeah.
Sure.
You do. Except now it's electronic.
That could be it.
Now it's electronic.
So there's. Yeah. We'll see. And I'm sure in a later episode of this podcast, I'll come back with like my actual thoughts. And but here's the thing, though. Where Aura it has a shortcoming that I think Samsung might be able to address. And Sam, you and I talked about this on the live blog. I think that if Samsung just does away with the subscription model that Aura is doing right now, that alone will appeal to all the people that are wearing Auras right now that are fed up with paying the subscription fee.
Can you guys quickly tell us, what does the Aura do? It does sleep tracking, right, and some health stuff?
Yep. So the Aura ring is basically a ring packed with sensors, mostly a heart rate sensor. And it does, yeah, you know, all the step tracking. It does like heart rate tracking when you're working out. It does like sleep tracking. And that's pretty much it. That's where it differs from a smartwatch, is that a smartwatch also has a screen for you to like get notifications. And of course you can get like, I'm sure, some small vibration notifications on the Aura ring as well, but it's not as comprehensive or sophisticated than, you know, a smartwatch with a screen can do. Aura did reach out and send me a statement about the Galaxy Ring, saying that it's been founded over a decade ago. It's invested relentlessly in service of creating the best smart that gives everybody a voice. There's a missing word in its statement, but cool. And so, according to Aura's statement, Aura has the strongest IP portfolio for the smart ring form factor in both hardware and software. So they're, make of that what you will about what they think Samsung's going to do.
What you're telling me is Aura sent on a press release saying, hey, we saw what Samsung did. We okay. And, let's move on.
I mean, more competition is good. I'm not saying there's no, like, there's no audience for this thing. I'm just saying it is, I think it's even less than the audience for a smartwatch. Because a smartwatch, at least you get a display, you could do things with it. These things are just going to be basically like little passive sensor buddies that will communicate with your phone. And yeah, the more people wear rings over time, like it can get super annoying if you get like bloated during the day or something, and your body changes when you're sleeping. It is annoying. It's constricting.
Oh, like, I can tell you, I can definitely not wear the Aura when I'm weightlifting. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to press into my fingers. I can't. That's or the Galaxy Ring. So, like, I get that. And it's not going to be the best, like, workout buddy for me. If you're running, maybe. But, like, lifting heavy things, no. Gripping onto handlebars, probably not. So, there's definitely specific audiences for this.
I will say, I don't disagree with anything, like, any of the negatives about rings, either you just said. I will say that this is like sort of a trend that we've been seeing a little bit, and it's been growing in that, like, I think there's an appetite for gadgets that don't look like gadgets. And so Samsung, the Frame TV is probably the best example of this, where you can have something, it looks like a piece of art on your wall, and that's great. And then at CES,
or the Frame speaker.
Right, we saw the music frames, which is the same thing, but for speakers. And so, hey, you have art on your wall, but it's also a pretty good sounding speaker.
That.
And so for people who don't want a screen on their wrist, aka a smartwatch, I'm kind of on board with the whole idea of, hey, you have a ring, it's a health and fitness monitor, and that's all it needs to be. And I'm okay with that. Granted, that's not for everybody, but, you know, I don't have any major oppositions to that thing in theory.
If you already, and for the people who already have smartwatches or fitness trackers, it's like, you're just double upping the thing on your hand for no reason.
Right. I think in that case, it's more of an either or situation. You're like, I want my smartwatch or I want my ring. There's no need for both.
That is weird. One thing I will say, it'd be cool if there was like programmable NFC or something. So it's like walking to work, tap into your building, you know, or something like that. Or
security. I would love to replace
my company that did that.
With a ring.
There was a company that did that, like, I want to say 5 years ago.
I remember.
One of my earliest meetings at Engadget, right? Yeah, they did like MTA, like payment, and also like building entry things, like with working with Vornado, and then they disappeared. And that's the problem with a lot of
these businesses. Because it's hard to do, because you have to authenticate identity with it
everything.
Too. So it has to be paired with your phone. If somebody figures that out and makes it like, also I'm doing biometrics often to log into our work stuff, our work emails, and also log into my Windows account. So there is like a need for better biometrics that could be cool in a ring format. I don't know. Well, listeners, let us know what you think. Are you excited for the Galaxy Ring or smart rings in general?
Do you like
rings?
Are
you using an Aura ring? Tell us what your experience is. Podcast@Engadget.com. Okay, Sherlyn, so talking about upcoming devices, I feel like the Samsung stuff is reachable for many people. The Vision Pro is not. The Vision Pro, you know, is a $3,500 headset. It's going to be up for pre-orders, probably as people are listening to this right now. It's going to have a very limited market from what we're hearing, but you finally got to try it out. I'm so happy for you.
All aboard the hype train. Okay, so some backstory, because you know I love my backstory. I got a call. Sam was with me. I got a call from Apple. I don't even know how much I can talk about these things publicly.
You got the word at CES, right?
I got a heads up. Uh-huh. Let's frame it more vaguely. I got a heads up at CES during a middle of a meeting. I had to step out and take it. And I was just like, cool, going to be in New York and doing this thing. So then that's when my excitement really started. I think you and I had talked on the podcast before about how that I had never gotten a chance to experience this. Finally got a chance to. And then, you know, us and The Verge were the two outlets that really had our hands-ons up at the time of the 1 p.m. Embargo. And dirty word. Dana came back from a day off, like, to do this. And I, like, you know, this was the first thing I did after CES. You know what I mean? Like, it was CES on Friday.
Yeah. So, like, a high-pressure hands-on.
Holiday. Yeah. And then Tuesday, first thing in the morning, Vision Pro hands-on. It was kind of like, I kind of had a break, but not really.
Yeah.
Or anyway.
Yeah.
But I just want to impress upon you, like, how important this felt, right? Because we're also leading up so close to the actual, like, not only just pre-orders, but the actual launch of the Vision Pro on February 2nd, that this felt like it was going to be really, like, final, what people would be buying, what people would be seeing in the real world. We would be seeing a lot more of the, like, actual applications and things like eyesight, which I think people hadn't seen before. Really, really hype. I got up early. I was just like, let's never miss this. And Dana and I wrote out a hands-on, which has been, like, recirculated everywhere. And also, cool thing is Apple, like, not only allowed us to take photos, but basically was like, we're going to take the photo for you.
This is the first time people could take photos while wearing the Vision Pro as well. So that's
exactly
interesting. Okay.
Which also means that they're pretty, like, happy with the final hardware look, which is why they're happy with it, you know, being published. And so us and, like, you know, The Verge's Nilay and Victoria, as well as, you know, people like Marquez and a lot of people around the internet got their pictures taken. It was cool, though, when I read back all the republished, you know, like, roundups of, you know, Vision Pro hands-ons round two, right? A lot of people picked up on a few things I said and Dana said, and to me, some stood out. Definitely everyone was using the fact that I said I was in pain to, like, headline their, like, roundups, right? Either it was excessively bad, like, twisting my words a little bit to be like, oh, outlook bad for Vision Pro because, you know, reviewers in pain. And I was like, I didn't say that. I straight up said it was really good. I was in pain because I didn't ask earlier for the strap. But what to set the scene for y'all and to, like, start from the beginning, when you put on the Vision Pro, the initial strap you're going to get is the one that has been seen in all the pictures, which is most of the pictures now, which is the one that just sits on the back of your head with a big, like, spongy pad there.
It looks very simple. It looks like it takes one strap to hold this giant thing in your head.
Right. It's the solo rear strap. Right. And that's not what I've usually worn for headsets, right? Usually they need that top strap. So, but what happened was I thought that was fine. I adjusted it with the twisty knob on the right side to make it tighter to my face. And, you know, they're like, oh, make sure it's tight and whatever. And I think a combination of me trying to make it tight so that it wouldn't slip down my hair, plus the fact that it wasn't, like, weight distributed the way I wanted it to be, caused me to, in 15 minutes, really, like, start to hurt.
Yeah.
And in 20 minutes, like, 5 minutes later, I was just, like, in so much, I was in pain to the point of, like, wanting to cry. And I have a history of wanting to cry when my head feels clamped. So
there's
it's not really,
too,
like,
much pressure on around your eyes, clearly. Yeah.
Exactly. It was like my front of my face was just bad. I was getting a headache. And I think I had the worst reaction of everyone, maybe because I'm just, like, more sensitive and a bit of a drama queen. But, like,
accurate.
Accurate. The other time I had this experience was when I was, like, riding a motorbike and, like, I was wearing a helmet that was not made for me. It was, like, a smaller size. And, like, I went a half hour, like, not saying anything, even though I was in pain. And then finally stopping, getting off the bike, and I was, like, crying. My boyfriend was like, what's wrong? He's like, why are you crying? I was like, because I'm in pain. He's like, ah, shit. Could have said something sooner. That's just me. Mm-hmm. I just want to point out.
Did Apple give you the top strap thing? Because we talked about this when I tried it on Sherlyn. Exactly. There's like a weird communication gap where Apple is just like, oh, you could just walk around with this thing with one strap and it's a magical device and it'll comfortably sit in your head. But clearly in my demo, they also had the top strap. I don't believe I used it, but it was an optional thing. And
I tried it on.
Yeah.
I feel
top
like
strap, much better.
I feel like Apple knows it's way more comfortable with that top strap.
Yes.
But it doesn't look it doesn't look as good. And so they would prefer everyone to at least try it without the top strap. And then if you really want it, you have to ask for it.
It looks like every other VR head strap with the top strap is the thing. And they don't want to look like that. They want to be Apple.
I will fully admit, it doesn't look as pretty either. Like that is definitely true. But, you know, you can't get around the fact that you need to distribute that weight a little bit better, which is why all the other headsets have a top strap.
Gotcha. So, Sherlyn, what did you actually do in the Vision Pro?
Okay, so I think the things that I did that Devendra, maybe you didn't get to do, were like check out the Disney Plus immersive environments.
Yeah, didn't exist.
Which placed me in the Avengers Tower and then in a land speeder in the Tatooine like landscape, which is really cool. Very immersive. I looked around. I saw like a takeout container from Shawarma Grill next to me, which was like nice. What do you call the Hulk Buster suit? Like, is that the name
it's
for
the
it?
Hulk
Buster, it's just a Hulk Buster suit.
Yeah.
Hulk Buster. Okay, so the Hulk Buster suit was to my left. And then like, I looked around. I was where like they were having that party where they were all trying to lift Thor's hammer. Uh-huh, I mean, like, that's the Avengers
Tower
scene.
It'd be cool if Thor's hammer was just like sitting there in the back. Yeah.
Like, for me to lift, right? But Thor's hammer wasn't there. Mjolnir wasn't there. But I was looking out, right, out of Avengers Tower. Behind me was a living room space. It felt so good. I looked around and like, wow, you weren't kidding about the resolution. Like I said in my hands-on, I saw no pixels. Like, even the Oculus Quest, like, I have the two, right? It still was, like, not nearly as good as this. The fidelity
These are
of this
micro
one.
OLED screens. So these are the finest screens ever made in terms of, like, fidelity
so good.
And resolution. Yeah.
So immersive. We also checked out immersive video, which is a new format that I believe Apple just launched. It's called Apple Immersive Video. We had, like, Alicia Keys kind of, like, coming right up to my face and singing. I could almost, like, you know, basically smell her breath.
Please, no.
I saw rhinos, charging at me. Then I think another one that was like really a cool use case that stood out was meditation. Is using the mindfulness app that you can already find on your Apple Watch or phone, and launching like a minute long meditation. But here's the thing, doing it with a headset on is surprisingly like better. Like, you actually get to drown out all distractions.
That's
you
true.
Actually block
it
actually, out.
It probably like centers your posture a little bit too, because you have to balance the thing maybe. I don't know.
Sure, it could be that, but it's also the fact that it just dims your environment to black, right?
Yes,
and then only the little like animated cloud in front of you is glowing, and then it bursts, and then all these leaves are floating around you, and it's playing soothing music. And by the way, the speaker was surprisingly good. Like, I could hear very clearly. That combined with the glow, combined with the fact that I was sitting on a couch at like 9 a.m. and sleepy, just everything felt so soothing, right?
But
so
did it feel more soothing than like on a Quest 3? I think that's the question.
That would be the good one, exactly. So I would say like that I need to do a meditation comparison to say on a Quest, but surprisingly enjoyed like meditation on a VR headset. Wasn't expecting that. I also got to try out the floating keyboard, and this is, I think, a point of contention for a lot of people out there. Now, so the floating keyboard is this virtual keyboard that, like I said, floats in front of you when you need to type. You can either use the standard navigation method, which is you look at things with your eyes, and then you select them by tapping your finger.
The eye tracking is so good. Yeah.
Eye tracking is so... It's to the point where like, I actually told Apple afterwards, I was like, maybe you should need a... You need to give me a bit more visual feedback when something's selected, like maybe something as ugly as a white ring around it, because like I didn't even know I was looking at something to select it, but then I had to look away and look back to make sure I was like actually like something was selected. But anyway, then I tap. So you can do that with the keys, but you can also reach out and try to touch those keys in the virtual environment. And this will actually work. Like, so I reached out for the S and I pressed down, and I had to reach very far away because the keyboard was floating too far away from me.
You could pull it closer to you, can't you?
Exactly. Yeah. I could have pulled it closer to me, but I didn't know this during the demo. I was just like trying. So I typed Engadget.com. I had no problem. I know Dana struggled to get the word Engadget.
Because you have to poke at it. You have to poke, like, imagine there's something in front of you, like two finger typewriter.
Are you back to like single finger pecking at the keyboard?
Pecking like a typewriter.
Yeah. Absolutely. You have to do that. You can't do like QWERTY. You can't do like touch typing. You have to finger point and push. But in if you can't make that work, and I will say it's not intuitive for everyone, right? Like, I thought it was fine. Not everyone did. But you can also use voice typing. So you can go to, again, look over at the search bar, wait for it to be highlighted, which doesn't take long at all. It's instant. And then tap, and then voice type. Or ask Siri. Like, it's just so many alternatives. You can also pull in the Bluetooth keyboard and have that be taken into your environment as well. So I didn't see it as a huge issue that it's not great. I think it's great for, like, a passphrase or, like, a quick short phrase, BRB, that sort of thing. Everything else you would use a regular keyboard for, I think.
It's there are different use cases for this thing too, right? If you're sitting in bed or on the couch watching videos, and we'll talk about where you can watch videos, you don't need the full power of a keyboard in front of you at all times. But if you're sitting at your desk and doing productivity stuff, did you get to try out any of that stuff, Sherlyn? Like, actually see like iPad apps or sit with it to like work with it?
We saw iPad apps. We were brought up, like, there's this folder on the dock, on the apps dock, called compatible apps. So anything that's like, you know, about a million, slightly over a million, they said for iPad apps were compatible and would work. They pulled up some like recipe app. I honestly can't remember offhand right now what exact app they pulled up, but we saw it work. I just didn't get to interact with it. It was more of like a, hey, here, this thing works demo. And I did use Photos to zoom in. So you do the pinch zoom gesture to zoom into photos. Panoramas were really
cool. Panoramas
look
amazing. Because it's like,
here's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people apparently try to zoom in on panoramas, and you can't actually zoom in on panoramas
because it's very big. Yeah. Not yet.
It is very big. But it might eventually.
One thing I wanted to just say, like, when you're sitting in productivity mode, the assumption is you're sitting at a place where you already have like a keyboard or something. Or if you're doing the MacBook mirroring, your laptop's keyboard and trackpad and all will still be there. So it's almost like this thing is like a multifunctional device where when you want to sit and type out a long email or something, you go to your desk and it'll pair with the keyboard and you can just do it like you do a normal computer. I feel like that's the thing. You're not going to type out a super long email from that virtual keyboard that's floating in the air. And I think that's that's probably pretty fair. I can imagine eventually like Apple doing a thing where you snap your fingers, you could get like a split keyboard across each hand and do like a bit of a Ghost in the Shell air typing thing. Like, I'm sure somebody's going to work on something like that, but this doesn't seem like a killer problem at this point. Yeah.
Oh, no, not at all. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think that, and I do want to get to some things that stood out to me as being very different from other VR and AR headsets that I've tried on. And I think that's where, like, you and Sam can really tell me if I'm wrong. But, like, A, I haven't tried a VR headset where that mix of the real world and the reality you're looking at is so well done.
They're doing it the best. The blend is so good. Quest 3 almost gets there, but this is doing it the best. You're right.
Yeah, so they did the immersive environment thing of like you can put yourself in a in view of a volcano. So like the Haleakala, I think it's the mountain, and you set above the clouds and all of that. And then we went from like using the digital crown to make that immersion view like more opaque or more translucent. And as you do that, you can see like people around you or the tables and chairs around you more or less. But, and I don't know if you experienced this, Dev, did you get the one where like you had what's called people awareness, where you can like look at a person as they're talking and they come slightly more into view and then they fade away as you stop?
So if you're in the full immersion, like full VR mode, and somebody walks by you and starts to talk to you, like they become like the silhouette, right? You can actually see them and still interact with them kind of seamlessly. That's something.
And the longer you look at them, the more of like the more opaque they become in the environment, until the point where like I had just the person on my left there, like outline just fully like stood out, like they were there in like the mountain with me, and then as I stopped looking at them, as I turned away from them, they faded away. It is some sci-fi stuff. And then when I was doing the dinosaur experience, which this was the part of our hands-on where I was screaming,
wait, let's set this up. So I did talk about there was an experience like towards the end of the demo where they like set it up where you're in immersive mode and a dinosaur comes through a wall in the room. It's kind of amazing and cool. And I was like, I was wondering, how much will this dinosaur terrify Sherlyn? Please tell us what terrified you, Sherlyn.
Okay, so you also didn't, you left out the fact that there's a start of this demo is them having a butterfly land on your finger.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
One of the most peaceful things you can experience in the world. Like when you're out there.
Why is it peaceful?
Just like, oh man, look at nature. I'm at one with nature with this butterfly on my finger.
So I will set this up in the sense that it is an impressive tech demo from Apple to be like, we're able to pinpoint where your finger is because of the cameras on our thing, and we're able to have this butterfly land directly on your finger. I don't like butterflies.
I did not know this about you. I knew about the rats, but now.
How did you not
know?
There's
a whole other level of torture.
If it's a creature, Sherlyn does not like it.
That probably makes sense.
Especially with wings. Okay,
once Sherlyn, when we were in Computex, I was walking around and like visiting stuff in Taipei, and once one of those giant dragonflies, like the really big ones, I looked over, it was sitting on my shoulder, and I was like, oh, that's so cool.
On your shoulder?
On my shoulder. It was like probably 6 inches wide. So look, now I only wish
we had giant
you
moths in Singapore for a bit of time. Anyway, so this demo, look, like I said, is impressive, right? To the point where like the butterfly actually, like it felt like my brain could not compute. It was like it landed on my finger.
Fight or flight.
And I had to do this twice because the first time I was sitting too close to the wall or something, so we had to recalibrate. Then they were like, sorry to do this to you again, because I was screaming the first time. They were like, sorry to make you experience that freaking butterfly sitting on your freaking forefinger again.
Nobody else has ever experienced being terrified by this.
I just love how Apple picked what is generally to be assumed the most like non-threatening thing in the world. People have written poems about how beautiful butterflies are. They're the symbol of spring. And here Sherlyn is screaming her head off because a harmless little butterfly landed on her finger.
No, but you could see, and this again is like part of the hands-on, like how good this freaking thing is. It's like the legs. I could see its legs and individual hairs on my fingertip. Like they insect legs. You know, like you fry those things and eat them for protein, okay? But you could see the hairs. You don't fry butterflies, but you can see like the hairs. I could see the hairs on these legs on my fingertip. I close my eyes, Devendra. I just looked away.
Okay, so this is selling how immersive. How are the dinosaurs? Like clearly you were immersed.
Fun. They were cute. The baby dinosaur was so cute.
And then like a big one sticks its head through the window. That was cute.
Yeah, it was cute. Yeah, it tried to bite me, so that was scary.
It tried to bite you. Yeah.
Yeah, but then like I started to stroke its head, and I felt no like haptic feedback or anything. Obviously, but I got close enough, and it looked as if my hand was making contact, even though I wasn't. It's nice. He started to protect me from the other predator. Yeah.
Let me see. Sam, I'm sorry, because now you're the odd one out who's not tried the Vision Pro yet.
Yeah.
But how do you feel like having read Sherlyn's hands-ons now? Are you more excited for this thing? Are you like, is this doing what you expect it would do?
I have two thoughts about it. I applaud Apple for making this thing because it like just from what people told me, it seems like the optics are incredible.
It's wild.
And that as like a person who loves headsets and all that, I think just that right there is a big step up. And then you add in the ability to like, do really seamless people detection and stuff like that, I think is wonderful. My like growing frustration is that people keep treating this like it's something that people are going to buy. This is very much a developer. Like a developer focused device that is not, it costs over $3,000.
$3,500 to start with 256 gigabytes of storage, which means there's going to be more expensive ones to get 512.
Oh, yeah.
Terabytes.
And so you have a lot of people, like, I feel like the expectations for this thing have already way far exceeded what this thing can do. Because, like, it's designed to be a standalone device, and then maybe you can use it, connect it to a laptop to get some work done. But the whole idea of like it being fully standalone and you're going to work on this thing for 8 hours a day, it is not meant for that. This is like the device that Apple is creating to have a starting point of how to get to that. And so, and this actually really bugged me at CES, where they're like, I saw a bunch of headlines comparing about like, people were coming out with new AR glasses, and it goes, so-and-so AR glasses is no match for the Vision Pro. And it's like, number one, these things are not competing.
So different.
Like, like the Vision Pro is $3,500. Like, I checked out a pair of Asus glasses. They were, like, going to be around $700. Like, orders of magnitude more expensive. And, like, Asus, like, was very clear. It's like, hey, our glasses are meant to provide you with virtual screens so that, like, you don't want a portable monitor, you can put on a pair of glasses and suddenly
you have...
They're
doing, like, what Xreal is doing, right?
Yes, so, 100%. Yeah. Or Vuzix has been doing for a long time. And it's like, okay, that's really good. There was no intention for, like, these things to compete. These, like, the Asus glasses have no AR detection. They're not looking at hand gestures. They're not looking at
eye tracking. It's just a screen on your face.
Right.
I'm
starting to get really frustrated when people just keep comparing things to the Vision Pro that should not be compared at all.
We need the clarity. This is why we exist. I think people, like, is the ultimate thing because, like, there's so many hype beasts out there and, like, a lot of the influencers...
Clickbait!
Yeah. Are just, like... really hyping this up, but also not being very realistic about what it is and what people should expect. I've, like, personally told people, do not buy these things. I know you're into VR. I know you're, like, very excited for it, but the Vision Pro is going to be a really cool toy for the first year, but this thing is existing right now for developers to get their hands on it and also for the crazy hardcore people who have way too much money to play with it, you know?
I think this is just going to be another status symbol. It's going to be the people who bought the first Teslas. It's going to be the people who have too much money to spend. And then they're going to take photos and post it to Instagram. It's going to be, like, for creators to, like, you know, again, brag about. Mr. Beast must have been paid money to go on Samsung. He's going to use that money to buy a Vision Pro. What I mean? Like,
I mean, listen, Mr. Beast takes a sneeze and, like, he is making the money for the Vision Pro.
Or Apple might just gift him one because, you know, but here's the thing. It's like Sam said, I don't think this is for real everyday people to use. This is for people who need it for any, like, sort of hype, attention generating sort of, like, they work in being on top of trends, or they have way too much money to spend, so they're billionaires. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, freaking Musk buys one just to, like, I don't know, therapy. That sort of thing. I don't think, you know, average Joe is looking at the Vision Pro.
We gotta like really center what it is. And the whole thing, like, I do think Apple's, like, pitching a 10-year plan here for whatever their spatial computing thing is. And when the first iPhone was released, it did not have 3G. It did not have an app store. It didn't even have apps. I think they were all trying to do all web apps for everything. So, like, even native apps, like, was really low. Like, the iPhone transformed into something more useful as they got feedback, as the technology improved. And then it became, like, the thing that we know. So we got to give the Vision Pro, like, some time for that. And that's partially why it's so expensive. We got to wrap in this section at some point. But I do want to say, Sherlyn, how was watching movies? Because you did test out the 3D movies in the Disney Plus app, right?
I was going to say, this is, like, something that I was, like, still kind of jealous because I want to experience that. Because from what I've heard, it's very engaging. And I think, you know, this is, like, the thing that I'm interested the most about, just, like, how it, delivers really high fidelity experience and a kind of transformative experience. It's not your traditional 2D movie.
Then is it going to be a bit disappointing to then find out that what I watched was the Super Mario Bros. 3D movie?
It's a good movie. Avatar. it's an okay movie. But did they show you Avatar 2 or anything? Because that's the one.
No,
to look at.
That's what I saw. I saw fucking Super Mario 3D. A trailer.
Well, how did it look?
Cool. I mean,
the 3D looked good. Like, better than the theater 3D or not? Look good.
Yeah. I can tell you this. I haven't seen the Mario movie in a theater. I saw it on Hulu or something.
Netflix.
And I have, like, a lot of heavy skepticism around 3D for, like, animated films. I'm just like, all right, they drew it a little harder. Like, I don't know.
That's not how it works, Shirley. They have to render it another for 3D movies.
They drew it harder.
And they drew it harder. They really.
I'm oversimplifying.
They
CG'd, but that's what I saw. I mean,
more.
I will talk about the Apple Immersive Video, which is also 3D 8K recordings. This is the Alicia Keys thing that I was talking about with the rhinos charging at me.
And these are 180-degree 3D videos. It's not 360, like older VR stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, not full, not, like, you know, but it has both spatial audio and, like, 8K recordings, that sort of thing. We flew over mountains and oceans. And you know what? The problem, I think, with this specific example for me is that this was the point where I was in pain. So I was holding up the visor with my hands, the Vision Pro with my hands, trying to focus. And I think I didn't get, like, the best experience. We might have swapped out over to the head strap, the dual loop band at this point, but I just was not really able to focus. So I think I wasted the opportunity.
Aww.
I will quickly say we did see, like, an Alfa Romeo F1 race car Jigspace.
Cool.
We actually checked out eyesight, by the way, which is when you look at the person from the outside, someone else wearing the Vision Pro, and see what their eyes kind of look like.
How did that look?
It looked like I wasn't sure. Okay, so
you're not real. All Marvel it's a fans. Visual representation of your eyes.
Yeah. So you know how whenever we watch an Iron Man movie, we see Robert Downey Jr.'s face sort of lit on the side by a glow? Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. So it's kind of like that, except worse, because it's not real. It's uh-huh. not... Yeah, so you're looking at the camera. And he was like, okay, so you see the person that was demoing it to us showed us, said like, look, I am blinking at you and whatever. And like at some point there was one weird flicker and that just completely ruined it for me. I was yeah. like, this is uncanny valley. It felt like I was talking to a cyborg almost, but like half human face and half not.
I guess it is better though than any other VR headset where it's just like you're exactly. staring at a blank cyborg. You know, you're staring at a blank exactly. frame or something. So it's not perfect from what I can see, but it's as good as we can get right now. Yeah.
Right. And the fact that it just indicates whether the person's able to see you or not, and if they're immersed in a different environment or not, like it does indicate on the outside for you, that alone is more thought out than any other VR headset I've tried.
I mean, that was so the thing was for cool. my hands-on too. Like the thoughtfulness yeah. that went into this thing, the gestures, yeah. like I love the tap yes. gesture. I do love the tap select yes. gesture and how seamless like scrolling felt and everything. Real quick, it does seem like Apple is positioning this as very much an entertainment device as well. So there are going to be a lot of iTunes 3D movies that you can buy and rent. But also what's really cool is that the Disney Plus, you know, app is going to have 3D movies in it, including Avatar, including like some of their big Pixar releases. I think that's pretty cool, to be honest. Like, but I'm a movie nerd. I'm a cinema nerd. I'm sitting, you know, not far from my projector. So I'm used to, I like seeing things big. I'm going to be really intrigued to see how that works. How was the sound for you, Sherlyn? Because when I talk to Apple, the speakers are good, the built-in ones, do you think?
Yeah. I heard everything well. I mean, Yeah, and the fact that I got a good meditation experience from it, I think, is part of the audio is part of the reason, and it was good. Not like Bose. I'm sorry, not like Sonos good. I think, you know what I mean. Like,
by Bose was probably a better pull than Sonos good, but yeah, you know. Apple did say, I believe, like those speakers support spatial audio. They're pretty big drivers. Like they sound good, but also, if you want like the full immersion, I did hear that you could just put in AirPods or something, or even the AirPods Max too. So
Max, yeah.
There are ways to like make that experience even better if you have that hardware. Any takeaways, Sherlyn? Because we're close to the launch for this thing. Is this something like if the Vision Pro were $1,000, you know, with all this tech in a couple of years, would it be something you buy? Like, what is the cutoff point for you to actually buy this thing for yourself?
If I were more immersed in the Apple ecosystem, yes. I want that like whole MacBook is brought in. I am very sold on how they're able to mix like the real world with the virtual. I don't know about any of the other use cases. I definitely have to use a dual loop band to even want to use this. But actually, with the dual loop band, I could see myself sitting on my couch and like just like
chilling.
Tapping around and chilling and all that sort of stuff. It's hard. I will say to me, and I think Sam, you have to tell me if I'm like left like outdated about VR headset stuff, but I feel like this is easily, I stand by what I said in my hands on, far and away the best VR era headset I've ever tried. I know you haven't had experience, Sam, but like
I will say it should be for the money.
It should be, yes.
Right.
Yeah,
from the
right.
tech that's in there. Right. It should be from the resolution we've seen from the screens in there. That there's a reason those screens look so good. It's because they're micro OLEDs and it's just like insanely good quality. One thing I did tell people, I know some people are buying it against my recommendation. I'm like, well, you better put in money to have an Apple laptop with you because I know you're a Windows user. And if you want to do any of this like carryover computing stuff, you need a Mac.
Our laptops, this is how they get you. Our work laptops are Macs.
Our work laptops are Macs, yes. But I'm talking like anybody else. Like if you're a Windows user, you better set aside another $1,500 or something for a MacBook Air because you're gonna need a Mac. Maybe a Mac Mini if you have a setup with that could be the thing, could be your conduit into the desktop world on the Vision Pro. So maybe there's a lot we still don't know, but we're gonna be hearing more soon. I'm excited to like get a closer look at this thing at some point. I don't know. I don't know when it's gonna happen, but we're gonna hear more about the Vision Pro soon, folks. So thank you, Sherlyn, for your feedback.
Of course.
Let's move on to some other news. And we're still going to be talking about Apple because the whole like Apple Watch drama about the blood oxygen sensor is not ending. There was news that Apple would be shutting off the sensor that's within the Apple Watches. As of today, as we're recording this, Apple is now selling Series 9 and Ultra 2 watches that have disabled blood oxygen monitors. It sounds like they're disabled by software because it is much harder to like jump in there and like, you know, remove this thing from production. So they are now selling these that have the sensor built in, that have the sensor. There's a whole thing going on about like what the court was going to allow. Like they were put back up for sale. But then the court, you see, the appeals court in DC granted a temporary pause on the import sales ban. Now that appeals court has been lifted, because they were forced to start selling the models by January 18th. So because of that, Apple has started sending out the disabled units. It's all very confusing. My thing though, because this is a, looks like a software fix, if this gets resolved, if Apple ends up paying Massimo for, you know, for a patent for their tech or something, they could just like re-enable this in these watches, right?
Yep.
That's
I mean, I think
thinking.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
If Apple can't like win the legal battle, they will pay a big lump of money over to Massimo and they will reactivate all the features on all the watches.
Yeah. So that's the story there. It is kind of confusing. It is kind of wild that it's gotten to this point, but Massimo is a company that is known for really fighting for their stuff too. I believe they've been in battle with like other, you know, other companies around this, but I also think they kind of have a point given the amount of people Apple has hired directly away from Massimo. So this drama is not done. If you need to buy an Apple Watch Series 9 now and you're worried about not having that sensor, I would bet like once this gets resolved, like you're going to get that sensor turned back on eventually. So don't worry
it's
too much.
It's not doing that much in there either.
Also in Apple news, Apple has updated its US App Store guidelines to allow developers to link to third-party payments. So basically if you're in an app and you want to, I think Kindle is a good example for this. If you're in an Amazon app, typically it tells you, hey, you got to do this from a web browser. You can't do this from our app because Apple takes a commission of stuff, bought through their apps. And typically you have to use Apple's payments. Now developers can link to websites, to their websites for purchases. And that'll be, you know, through the web, through that company's whole mechanism. Apple will still take a cut. They're still trying to take a commission from these things. The commission is at 12% for developers, part of its small business program, and 27% for larger developers. I do wonder, and I think even Apple has pointed this out, 9to5 Mac had reported on this, there's no way in hell for Apple to tell what purchases are actually happening once people hit that link. What are they, what money do these companies actually owe them? I believe Apple says that, you know, they're allowed to audit, you know, partners and see like where those payments are going. But that's going to be
an honor system.
Yeah, it's an honor system thing. That's going to be a weird issue for Apple moving forward. But hey, at least we will start to see some of those links start to appear, at least in the US and hopefully elsewhere soon. Moving on to another big company, Google announced that it is fully supporting Right to Repair. This is the same company that has spent, you know, years lobbying against it, but it has recently voiced support for an Oregon bill. There's like a big blog post Google's talking about like the need for basically making more repairable devices and having, you know, the equipment out there, and also like a bit of a dig at Apple. The dig is it's specifically the thing where you link parts pairing is the term, right? Where you link a specific part via like a software thing or via like a barcode to your device, which limits like how third-party repairers or installers can actually use those things. You can't just grab something off the shelf and fix your device. Apple is doing that for their things, even though they're now doing some repair programs. Google basically took a dig at that and just saying like that's not how we're going to do things. Right. Do you guys have thoughts on this? Yeah,
and this was an issue or last year when some people reported that like they were getting third-party camera fixes for their iPhones and the parts weren't working, and it's because they didn't have the correct software unlocking process. And so that can definitely be a big issue. I think it's a very, very fair point.
So, hey, good news for Google. I think it's not entirely like altruistic. Like they're also complying with California rules to make this happen. But I do think like as a company, it is nice to see Google put some full-throated, you know, support towards this. I'm sorry it took so freaking long, but
exactly. Yeah. I'm like, why did it take so long?
Because they didn't have to do it. Like they don't do this until they have to. And that's unfortunately how corporate governance works in America. It's a damn shame. Speaking of corporate governance, OpenAI announced it laid out its misinformation strategy ahead of the 2024 elections. I believe it will involve the detection of AI generated images. And the whole thing is not allowing images of politicians, I believe, is the whole thing. Did you guys see this story? And are you worried about like what we're heading into, basically?
I mean, it's one thing for OpenAI to say this, but at the same time, it's like we're like, you know, I think the bigger issue, like TikTok, X, Twitter, whatever, you know, the social media at large. Because just OpenAI saying it's going to do this, I don't think it's going to make a huge impact.
To be clear, TikTok did announce some stuff, has announced some stuff by the time this episode goes up. That, like, yeah, it has some, like, updates to its election, like, policies, I guess, around election. All this reminds me is that this year is an election year, and I'm like, cool.
This year's going to suck. It's not going to be great for news. Richard Lai wrote up the OpenAI story for us. Richard Lai, OpenAI, rhymes too easily. He's saying the OpenAI is highlighting its use of cryptography to encode the provenance of images generated by DALL-E 3. This will allow the platform to better detect AI-generated images using a provenance classifier in order to help voters assess the reliability of certain content. So you will see, hopefully, you know, some information saying, hey.
Finally, a good use for crypto.
I mean, good use for crypto, but also like a warning that this is AI-generated. I think that is something that is really, that would be useful to see. Also, in recent news, OpenAI announced that its policy no longer explicitly bans the use of its technology for military and warfare. What could go wrong? What could go wrong there, I guess?
Nothing, clearly.
Nothing, clearly. In more fun news, there were stories...
And more what could go wrong.
Yeah. There were stories going around this week about, first of all, the entire country, all of the U.S. is facing extreme cold. Things got really cold down here, even in, like, Georgia and, you know, things where it's typically not that bad in the winter. But in Chicago specifically, the temperature got really, really low. Like, there was a point where it was 2 degrees Fahrenheit, felt like minus 20 because of the wind chill. And those extreme factors basically have led to a lot of Teslas at supercharger stations basically being dead in the water. And there were news reports. There were a lot of videos about this. One person called it a bunch of dead robots at the Tesla supercharger areas. The optics look bad. I do want to point out that there's a very good video from one of my favorite YouTube car people, Out of Spec Reviews. And he actually did the YouTube dream of like following the content. You know, he flew to Chicago to see what's happening at these supercharger stations. He's a really informative guy about EVs. But he like looked at this and was just like, yeah, this is a problem. For these superchargers to work and these stations to work, things have to happen above freezing. So if you take your car there and the battery is already dead and it's like frozen and really cold, it's not going to charge immediately. It may not charge at all. So there are basically things the Out of Spec guy is recommending, like, do your charging at home when you can or at work where it's like not like an open air thing, like a public charging station. That is unfortunate for like Uber drivers and people, even around here, like people who buy EVs but do not have the charging infrastructure at home because they live in an apartment. So often they charge their cars, you know, at a public spot, just like a gas station. That leads to issues. Also, our infrastructure sucks. Like the chargers we actually have tend to fail very often. It seems like they were failing more often because of the cold. There's a wide variety of battery tech out there across all these cars, so people don't know the best practices for dealing with their cars. Sam, I know you're following, you know, the transportation side of things. How do you feel about this, seeing this story?
I think this is sort of one of those inevitable conflicts where we have a population that's switching from gas vehicles to EVs. And by and large, that, you know, transition is kind of, you know, not a big deal. But there are a number of details, which includes charging when it's cold, that unless you really think through and think about beforehand, you could find yourself in a kind of sticky situation.
You could be stuck. I mean, listen, there are Teslas in Alaska. There are Teslas like in northern Canada where it's even more cold and they're dealing with more stuff. And we don't hear these widespread problems. So it does feel like this is a thing that hit Chicago specifically because it was so cold so quickly. And the equipment couldn't take it. And these drivers were fully unprepared for like how bad it got, even though Chicago's really bad in the winter usually. So,
right. And even like even if you drive an EV and it's specifically Teslas, if you are like, you know, driving a Tesla and you're going to go charge it at a supercharger and you put it in your map, the car will send you a notification, say, hey, we're going to condition the battery so that in the optimal state when you finally get to the charger, so it's ready to accept the best possible charge. And it will also do this in the cold. Now, you know, there was not too long ago, there was a point where some EVs would not have heaters to keep their battery warm. Teslas don't have these issues. But like I said, if you're showing up to a charger with a dead car and it doesn't have any energy to condition its battery, yeah, you're going to have a real big issue. And on top of that, you know, because of the temperature changes, you're going to have a battery that, you know, maybe has 20%, and suddenly that 20% turns into single digit percentage of
the
battery,
range will be all over the place. Yeah, it's right. Not like a gas tank, you know, so that this sucks.
I think it's one of those unfortunate side effects of that transition period, and we're kind of in this like situation where we have a lot of the early adopters who are, you know, very positive about EVs have, you know, kind of already made that transition. And then you have, you know, the kind of general public who is still, you know, kind of on the fence about how they think about it. And they see these and they start to get worried a little bit more.
Well, it's a lot of like general public. Tesla's got really cheap lately because the value tanked quite a bit, and also used ones were on the market. So they became really popular among rideshare drivers, too. There are a lot of people driving these things who aren't like fully in the EV mindset and doing all the research and stuff to you, and like you expect the thing to work, but also if you go take your phone outside in like minus 20 degree wind chill, your phone will die almost immediately. It's a lot of issues.
Just last week at CES, I was getting Ubers around from meeting to meeting, and there's two situations where we got into a Mustang Mach-E and the driver had to like open the door and tell us, hey, by the way, push the button because there's no handle on the door. And it's like, I know this because I've driven a Mach-E before, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of little details that like, hey, it's going to take some adjustment. And even, you know, you see this on the handles part, you see this on gas cars too. So it's not just an EV only thing. It's kind of like, that evolution of technology means can be a little harder to keep up with sometimes.
Be careful out there on the road, by the way. People, like, this week is just like hell. It's not great. Like, I have summer tires on my car because a lot of people told me, like, hey, you're in Georgia. It's like, it's totally fine. That's what we bought it with, and I never got around to changing it. It was like 15 degrees yesterday morning, and I had to be very careful driving my kids to school. We stayed home a day when it was raining, and clearly everything, like, iced over. I'm going to all-season tires because you got to, like, take care of those things. I saw a Tesla with fully like two blown out tires parked in front of my kid's school this morning, clearly because like those are heavy cars. And also those tires did not look like they were ready for winter. Those tires looked like they were summer tires, basically. So be careful out there. You know, as a driver, like there's just stuff you got to try to be aware of because, you're driving a freaking kill box on the road out there. Related to all of this, by the way, Hertz announced that it's selling 20,000 EVs and replacing them with gas-powered vehicles, which, good God, that is sad. But that also means a flooding of the market of EVs are coming. So if you're looking for a used EV, that's probably a thing. I really wonder, like, what the issue was there. Let me see. Expenses related to collision and damage primarily associated with EVs remained high, according to Hertz. That is true. There's a lot of stories going around. If you have, like, a minor bumper, fender bumper or something with a Rivian, it can cost you a lot of money because the parts are not like very common.
And if you do any damage to the battery, like you're basically totaling the car.
You're screwed. You're basically screwed. So still issues we're working out. But hey, if you want a cheap used EV, you're probably going to find more in the market soon. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Sam, what do you got for us?
So I've been watching this and it's very confusing to me because I can't decide if it's good or not. So basically, I've been watching the new Percy Jackson show on Disney Plus, which is kind of like, a reboot of the old movies and
the books.
The movies.
And, I think that franchise kind of fell off like after the third or fourth movie, however. And
they made three movies. What?
I think so.
I think it was three. I don't know. I know for sure.
That was the post Harry Potter era where literally any like vaguely successful YA thing had a chance. Yeah.
And so theoretically, that's kind of like up my alley because it's like I love like having the whole pantheon of gods thing and talking about like, hey, there's like Hermes' son and like, Poseidon's son or whoever is like, out doing some magic quest. I've watched, I think I'm like four or five episodes in. I just can't decide if it's good or not, but I'm going to keep watching it. So maybe
Sam,
give
there
a try.
Are better things for you to watch. Like value your time. Come on.
But I do appreciate that. Like they have reboot the series and it does feel like they've made an attempt to like, hey, it is targeted at young adults. And so sometimes that comes with like, less quality or less thought put into it, but it does seem like they're doing a good attempt. And the kid actors are surprisingly convincing, so I just can't figure out where my official stance is on it yet.
Yeah, I hear people are digging it as far as like a YA TV show. Anything else you've been watching, Sam?
I don't want to mention what you're going to bring up soon, I've also been trying to catch up with Good Omens 2, which is sort of in the same vein, but more an adult take on gods are living amongst us and all that.
But that's a good show nobody is talking about. Yeah, great cast, but it's like a lot of Amazon things. They make things and just like never promote them and never like give them a big
It came out and I haven't heard anything about it since, and or probably in the future, but we'll see.
Very well. Sir Lynn, what is up with you? And by the way, have you checked out Brother's Son yet? Because I feel like that was made for
you. I know you texted me. Yes. You texted me about it. And honestly, y'all are going to hear this week. I just basically had no time to watch TV. So I've basically not been watching TV. I will catch up on that once I can. My pick this week is more of a, like a Sam thing where I'm like, I'm not sure if it's good or bad. I saw Self-Reliance on Hulu.
It's okay.
Everybody's been...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like right in the middle of like, I get what you're going for, but I was also kind of disappointed because there's a lot about the movie I wanted. So, synopsis. Jake Johnson, Lonely Islands Productions, Anna Kendrick. They're Andy Samberg's part of this. They basically do a sort of borderline Squid Game premise where Jake Johnson's this like everyman. He's like got a sad life, got broken up with his girlfriend, dumped by his girlfriend maybe like 2 years ago and is still kind of lonely. And is approached by a limousine containing Andy Samberg,
playing
who rolls
himself.
Down the window and is like, hey, playing himself, going like, hey, you like limousines? Get in. And is like, hey, do you want to play a game? We know all these details about you. Come play a game. Basically, if Jake Johnson's able to not get killed by a bunch of hunters from around the world in 30 days, he will win $1 million. It is apparently a dark net TV show, which I've never heard of before, but cool. The loophole, according to Jake Johnson in this show, is that as long as he's not alone, he won't get killed. Because he can't be killed if there's no one near him. If there's someone near him because of the liability and danger of hurting other people. So then in his quest to stay alive, he, you know, finds ways to make people be around him. And that's what this movie is about. Don't you dare for a moment think you're in for a fun adventure romp. Don't you dare for a moment think it'll be a big reveal and you will see this show. Because you do not. This is basically a rom-com. Just fair warning. This is a rom-com.
I mean, listen, don't cast Anna Kendrick into this thing and not be like, I have a crush on you, Anna Kendrick. So
Yeah. Exactly. So there you go. I did not know if I liked it is my main takeaway. I know it's doing the rounds on Hulu is getting a lot of attention there, but
It's a perfectly fine movie. It's Jake Johnson's directorial debut, I believe. And here's the thing. I think Jake Johnson deserves a better career because I've always loved him. Loved him on New Girl. He's been great in like a couple of random movies. I think he was in one of the Godzillas. Or Jurassic World. He was the first Jurassic World, I think.
Oh, yeah. He was a worker in the control room.
Yeah.
Sorry,
he was one of
those.
Were
you about to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, this sort of reminds me, it's a little bit different, but it sort of reminds me of that Jennifer Law, Chris Pratt sci-fi movie
Jennifer
where
Lawrence?
They're trapped on...
Passengers!
Totally different. It was supposed to be a sci-fi movie, but it ended up turning into like a creepy rom-com in a way. And
I'd call that rom-com. More like a, I don't know.
Rom-crime.
Also, I was going to say, before we get to Devendra's pick, my wife was listening from the other room, and I need to correct myself. There was only two movies, but there were five main Percy Jackson books.
Yes.
Thank you, Mrs. Rutherford.
Thank you for correcting Sam. Cool. Well, anything else you want to mention about that, Sherlyn, or anything else you're doing?
And then I've just been watching a YouTuber, but I don't want to mention them because like every time I mention a YouTuber on this show, they get canceled. So it's like, never mind. I like them so far.
Yeah, you're the curse. You're the curse over here. By the way, also good show. Check it out. It's on Showtime right now. I'll talk more about the curse once I finish seeing the whole thing, but it is very much a thing in your vein, Sherlyn. Like, I think you would actually really dig it. The thing I want to talk about is True Detective Night Country, which is the fourth season of True Detective. It is back. It is fantastic. It is so good. I was lucky enough to get screeners for this because I'll be talking about it on my movie podcast. But I plowed through the whole season in like 3 days. And I had like, I guess, time post-CES. So that was helpful.
So I got to ask you, compared to True Detective Season 1, which I think is like
it's
really
very good.
High up there. Like, how do you compare it to Season 1?
I think it's as good and honestly better is the thing. Like, I like this pairing. I like, first of all, it's Jodie Foster back in Silence of the Lambs mode as a police chief who is confronting a major crime, or at least like a mysterious crime. A bunch of scientists from an Alaskan science like outpost disappear. That's the kickoff. And wow. She's also working together with Kali Rice, another cop. Kali Rice is like a newcomer. She has done a short indie film. She's a former boxer. And I love her presence because she is basically like a tall, tough Amazon. Like she is just like, and she's also a Native woman too. So it's like, it's good to have her perspective in an Alaskan set story. This is a cold, cold story. It's set in a forever night. That's why it's night country. But it's cool. It's spooky. There's a bit of like dark magic going on. There's a bit of like, ooh, a bit of the like stuff that they're building up with the rest of True Detective 2 of like things going back to the far, far times, you know. I don't know if I'd call it Lovecraftian, but there's like, you know, mystical stuff. Ooh. So it is cool.
You're just saying things that I like right now.
So if you want like a cool, creepy, it's also a murder mystery too. Yes. Like in addition to those scientists disappearing. And it's also like, I think it's better than season one because I love season one, but it also was very from the perspective of a guy ogling, you know, dead women at times. Like it really like sexualized the violence. And this season is like the complete direct opposite. Like it's in a cold environment. It's about two women. The men in the show, I think almost always are like kind of look like fools is a thing too, so that's kind of interesting. It's also created and showrun by Issa Lopez, who's a Mexican filmmaker, so I appreciate her perspective here. What's up, Cher?
Echo is also out on Disney Plus, which has a lot of Native American actors in it as well, so shout out to that. I've been watching it. It's pretty solid so far.
I just wanted to ask if I needed to watch True Detective Season 1 to be able to watch this season.
You should watch Season 1 because it's very good, but also watch the season first because I do think it is a better story, and it's not like it's not as like inherently misogynistic. Like the thing about True Detective, even the credits to True Detective had like, you know, a woman in like skimpy clothes who was all bound up because of a crazy serial killer. And this one is not that. This one is something very different. There's even like an environmental bent to it that I think is kind of cool. But it's also very
I'm definitely checking this one out.
I just remember season one because Matthew McConaughey's performance in that is just incredible. And so
good. The writing was fun. It was just, it really had us for like a little while because it seemed like a show that would veer into full on like Lovecraftian horror and like old god stuff. And it never quite did that, but it was really cool. It was a cool like group watching experience, you know, and it's nice when those things kind of arrive. Anyway, the first episode of True Detective Night Country is out. I recommend watching. It's very good. And I hope you check it out soon, Sherlyn.
Well, that's it for this week's episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on, I guess we'll call it X now.
You can find Devendra online at...
I'm at Devendra everywhere, but especially Mastodon and Blue Sky. And check out my movie podcast, The Filmcast, at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me, I guess, I don't know, movies to watch. Dang, I ran out of a fun one
or
to say today.
Or just pictures of butterflies.
Yeah, send Sherlyn butterflies. Yeah.
No, cute baby dinosaurs. That's what you send me. Man. You send them to me over at Sherlynstagram on Threads. I guess on X/Twitter, I am at Sherlynlow there. Or just email them to me at Sherlyn, Sherlynn, at Engadget.com. Now email us your thoughts at podcast@Engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And subscribe everywhere you get podcasts. Where can I get some sweet, sweet barbecue? And even like sweet, sweet barbecue was like too
suggestive.
Apparently I'm too sexy for Samsung's gauss.